Session number 13357, Mr. Arthur Bailey, Reel 2.
Mr. A. Bailey, Reel 2. Do you recall much of the journey to Chipping Norton, Mr. Bailey?
I remember going down in the train and marching up the street at Chipping Norton with the old brewery. Everybody was out, you know, first troops there at the beginning of the war.
Were you well received?
You're very well received. Nice place. I've been back several times since Chipping Norton.
What kind of things were you doing down there? What training?
Training, getting ready to go to France.
Did you know you were getting ready to go to France?
Yeah, at least I did. Because, you know, with being in the job I was doing, I knew that, you know, that they were getting new transport and that, ready to go to France.
Now, you've gone down by train.
Yeah.
You didn't have transport, you get it down there.
We had so much. So much went down by road. I wouldn't like to say how much. I wasn't that much involved then. But we did get some civilian transport, cars and that, to Chipping Norton, which we didn't take to France with us. We did get military vehicles at Chipping Norton, new vehicles.
And these were coming in and replacing the civilian transport.
Yeah.
Did they go back to their original owners?
I think they would, yeah. They'd be taken back to a depot where we picked them up at. I was there when we went to pick them up. These cars, and of course, some of the people didn't know how to drive, and I didn't know how to start them. You know,
were there a mixed bag of transport, or
yeah,
did they try to get the same kind of vehicle?
No, they were a mixed bag. He just went and picked. Got a key and picked them up. If they started with a key, a lot of them didn't. You know, they weren't used to self-starters in those days. They used to the handle. There's one we couldn't get started because she had to press the throttle down. That was the starter. Unbelievable.
At Chipping Norton, where were you accommodated?
In the old brewery.
What were the conditions like?
Only moderate.
Can you describe them?
Yes, it was a very low building, and we just slept. We did have bunks, the transport had bunks, 4 day bunks up the stairs, but there was no toilets, anything, nothing. Toilets were right away outside. They were just very ancient affairs. The military, they were just military dry toilets. That we used in that.
What kind were these?
They were just built like Nissan Dutch style, with Nissan, with the corrugated chain. Yeah.
And there was a bin or a...
Bin, just bins. They'd have to be emptied every day, I think.
Were you kept warm? Were you warm enough in the brewery?
Not really. It was the first Christmas of the war. And you know, it was cold, really.
How much bedding did you have?
Well, we saved the monies, but I remember we used to pay two shillings a week for a bucket of warm water. We all used to wash in that. Most of us had scabies. We had to go to hospital to tid with.
And how did you get this? How were you catching this? Was this from the general dirtiness?
Well, washing on our boat. 20 or 30 of us washed in one bucket of water. You know, I don't think it was very hygienic at all. We should have went outside and washed in the places, but I mean, it was cold, that cold.
You had an outside ablutions?
Well, very primitive. We were having to break the ice in the water sometimes.
Who were you buying the hot water from?
Well, the cocos. So you always get the lads that find out these things, don't you? About water to get washed and shaved in. But I used to be up early on the morning, I had a good turn.
What were you sleeping on?
Palliasses with straw in.
And how were you able to stack your equipment?
You should have stacked it up on the bed.
Did you have much, many problems from thieving and...
No, not really. They all knew each other. They were good like that. There's no trouble like that. They're really good lads that way.
Where did you eat?
Well, we went down and used the lower part of the building. We just had big... We had a mug what we used to use, not enamel, was like bronze effort. We used to use that for drinking. We didn't have cups. But our own knives and forks.
And your own cooks?
No, we didn't have cups. We used to have like these bowls we used to drink out of.
No, the cook, was it your company cook, battalion cooks that were making the meals for you?
Oh, yes, the battalion cooks, yeah.
What were the meals like?
Well, they were all right, I suppose. You know, when you would eat.
Do you recall?
Huh?
Do you recall the food that you were getting?
Not really, I mean. You see a lot of dipping bread with bacon and stuff, and, you know. It was dried, it was nearly frozen while you got it. I suppose it was. It did us what we needed, really. I mean, when you reckon some of the lads that have been brought up that way, really, pitmen and that, weren't they? So I suppose it wasn't like what we got at home, but...
Keeping your utensils clean, washing them, how was that done?
Well, you said to wash them the best way you could. There used to be a bucket of water brought in, or a... canister of water brought in hot, and you've got you wash your thing one after another. I mean, you've considered it was the beginning of the war, and everybody was in the same boat, weren't they? There's nothing prepared, really.
Where were the officers housed?
They just stayed in people's houses.
Did you feel any resentment that you were in the rather rough conditions and they were more comfortable in people's
homes? No, not really. No, I never bothered about it. I was quite happy.
Did the people of the area invite you into their homes?
Yes, they did, yes. I made some good friends. Really good friends. People that went to Salvation Army that I knew. Business paper and that, they were very good to us. We used to go down of all meals, a lot of, you know, when we finished on a night, they used to go and they all used to make us something.
How did you relax? What kind of things were you doing for your leisure time?
Well, I used to go to the local Salvation Army, Chibby Norton. You know, because I don't drink or smoke or anything like that. So naturally, I mean, if you don't do these things, you're a bit of an outsider, aren't you? So my easiest thing was to go to the Salvation Army, take part in their activities.
Were there any others of your company or
yes.
unit with you?
No, there was quite a few, about 4 or 5 of us used to go.
The rest of the battalion?
Well, they went to the pubs and that, and, you know, the local... things that was on.
How did you take to the lack or loss of privacy in a unit, in a barn place, living close to each other?
Well, it just something you had to get used to, you had to survive, didn't you? You had to make the best of everything.
Did any men find it difficult that you recall?
Well, they never really said, never complained much.
In your training, obviously you were still involved in motor transport.
Yeah.
Because the war had started, because you were planning, obviously, to go to France, did you have any extension to your training outside of the transport business?
Not really. Just what I'd done at Chilwell. I was the only one that had been away like that in the regiment. So I knew the army procedure for all these different things. That's where I'd been when I went to the school in Chilwell, which was good because I was able to keep them right and help them. In a way, the officers depended on me a lot because they'd never been trained. Transport officers weren't trained, they were just selected.
What was Lockhart like?
Lockhart was good, great fella. I don't know whether he knew about him when he escaped and did the walk in the desert. And he had flat feet to start with, he walked the desert. You know what I mean? His discipline ship was marvellous. You know, when we were in Cyprus, when we were enjoying everything we could get, although there wasn't a lot of food in, Cyprus wasn't the way it is today. You know, he was just drinking so much water, he was just thinking, you know, he had to come to that. The skateboard, a prisoner war camp, and walk it in the desert. Suicide, really. But he managed to get back.
Did you have to, in your training, to come back to your training, did you have to, did you have gas training?
Anti-gas precautions? No training like that.
Did you have any kind of weapon training at all, just to get you used to your weapons?
Not me, no, I was given a revolver. I had a revolver and that was it.
What make was that?
Well, it's the 308, they used to call them. I don't know.
Did you ever practice with it, fire with it?
No, practice myself, yeah. Yeah.
So before you went to France, you'd gone through this technical course.
Yeah.
But you hadn't yet been promoted to technical sergeant.
No.
And yet they were still already, when you got back, relying upon you.
Yeah, I was a corporal. Well, I was the only one that had been trained. In the, I suppose, the sergeant that is, he was still there. He was still my sergeant.
And until who was that?
Sergeant Ken, Dickie Kent. And until they were notified about what had happened, we'd come back from France and that, he was still there. Only he wasn't doing the job, but I was doing it, really.
So the battalion would be training, obviously.
Oh, yeah, they were training, yeah.
Where did you fit into that training in that area?
Why, just I was on me employed all the time with my job.
Was that still in the office?
Well, no, running the travel. Well, I was always in an office. Always had an office. You know what to run it from. I used to be in charge of all the inspections, and then I said what had to be done to the lorries. All the different things, the repairs. Saying that the repairs, sending them away and ordering all the parts that we needed, you know, to keep them on the road.
Did this mean that you had to inspect each vehicle yourself?
406 inspection, what they call a 406 inspection, yeah.
What's 406? Is that a form?
Yeah, both the Cape. Both in the colonels, well, or the adjutant says it and they sign it. Each vehicle had a 406 both. And then you had to put on all the work that had been done, the vehicles and everything, all the repairs that had been done.
Were there any repairs that were constantly recurring to these vehicles?
No, they weren't that old, really, you know. We didn't have a lot of trouble like that. We did later on in the war, in the desert.
So if the battalion went out on some kind of manoeuvre, what were you doing then?
We were at the back with a breakdown truck. You know, with a truck, breakdown truck with us. So we were there with that.
So what were you doing with the transport moving ahead of you? What was your job then?
If anybody broke down, we tried to repair them or tow them or get them towed away or something like that.
What was the truck that you had?
It was just a 3-ton Bedford truck.
What did you carry in it?
All the stores. Everything. It was a store truck inside with bins in all the parts. And we were there, the fitters, and I was there with them. We used to travel on this truck. The fitter side and the maid travelled in the front mainly. We used to sleep in it, no, in front. Take the gear lever out and one sleep with his head one way and one the other way.
Have any other memories of being in the Cotswolds area that stands out in your mind?
took me nothing. Just having to go in the hospital, he did with. We were. I mean, when you went on the sick parade, you had to go early on the morning. It was cold weather when we were down there, you know. Very cold, really. And riding on this truck, open truck, I just had to get in the back like the other men away down there, Tidworth Hospital. Cold shower, sulphur baths. Cold sulphur baths, they were shoving there in. And
what was this for?
We all had scabies.
It was an epidemic in the battalion.
Which we didn't realize. Well, yeah, we did. I mean, we hadn't been used to anything like that in civilian life. We didn't know what it was, did we? Did we went on the sick parade and they used to paint you with anywhere there was air, like paint you with this blue, I think it was blue stuff and that.
How long did it take for you to recover from it?
Well, what actually happened, someone come to me in Tidworth and says, we're getting leave. So he wanted to say, you're all right in there. When they come around, they said, oh, are you all right? I said, yes, discharged. I went to see my own doctor at home, which I got wrong when I got back to the military. You know, coming away from the hospital when I was 9.
So you got leave. When would this be?
The first Christmas of 39.
How did you get back home?
On the train. There's a troop train put on from Chipping Norton.
Getting home at Christmas, the first time as a full-time soldier, yeah. Of course. How were you received at home?
Well, they naturally, there were places to stay. I mean, there were always places to stay. And being the baby of the family.
Were you the only one of the family in uniform?
No, I had another brother that went in. He wasn't in then. He was down in the Sudan later on. He was in transport and all.
People around you, your friends and so forth, how did they receive you back home?
Well, I mean, they were pleased when we used to come home, which is natural. He plays in the band and he's come home.
So you got involved with the band straight away, Salvation Army
just
band?
Yeah, just carry on, just as though I'd never been away. It was all like that right throughout the war whenever we came home. And when we'd been away for years, sometimes come back, you know, people thought it was just that you never altered or anything like that, you know.
What's the Salvation Army's attitude to soldiering and fighting? Did they were they against it or?
Well, really, they are against it. I mean, killing people and that. A lot of them non-combatant, aren't they? Well, I was non-combatant when I was in the band. That's how we get so many Salvation Army lads in military bands. This is what happens: you join the military, the band, and that, and non-combatant.
But there's obviously no rule that you shouldn't be in a combatant situation yourselves.
Oh no, well, you're fighting for your country, aren't you, in that respect. I mean, there's even German Salvation Army lads in the army, you know.
Do you feel that your religious beliefs, which were obviously so strong, helped you through those years?
Yes, I believe it did, yeah. Yeah. I never thought that I wouldn't come back. Even going on the invasion and, you know, all these different things. I never thought that I would never come back. I always had plenty of faith, whether it was just good luck or not, mine. But I always had plenty of faith.
And what was the role of prayer in this? Did you pray often?
I always pray myself, yeah. Yeah.
That was to yourself?
Yeah. Pray, well, to God. Creator God, yeah. I believe in prayer, yeah. I'd be an hypocrite if I said I didn't, wouldn't I?
You said that you were fighting for king and country. Had you any feelings that you were also fighting for freedom? Did that kind of thing come into your thoughts? Or your beliefs?
Well, actually, I mean, I never thought there was going to be a war, so I never thought of going up. It was just the situation I was in through joining the band, the TA. The band, I was called up, and that was it. There wasn't much you could do about it then, was there?
The propaganda of the time, you know, that the Germans would come and they'd take your families, etc., etc.
Well, actually, I had a bit of idea about because where I worked in the garage when I first left school, the old schoolmaster there, he'd been to Germany a lot, and he was always preaching to us about Italy and about what was going to happen. But I mean, he didn't take any notice, he didn't bother, did he? Italy didn't mean anything to us.
So you didn't really follow the news readings of the time and this kind of thing, of his rise to power and so forth, and see that as a threat?
Not really.
In your own life, of course.
No, you're only interested in your own affairs, weren't you, really? I mean, war was a thing that happened 20 years before to me. I mean, it was someone that had been and gone. I knew about the First World War and that, you know.
Did you feel that this war would follow a similar pattern to the First World War?
I didn't really know much about the military in that respect, you know what I mean? I knew I was with the infantry, and I knew what they did. I understood that, and the way they were trained and all that, for trench warfare and what have you. I understood all that.
Obviously, as I said, you were very much involved in the mechanical side, the transport side, but you would see what was the training was about.
Yeah, yeah.
Was that First World War training that they were getting at this stage?
Yeah, that's what they did, yeah. That's what they did, exactly. They just followed on from the First World War. That's the sort of training they did. Maybe it's a little bit more modified, but that was it. I think the majority of people thought this is what was going to happen, the same sort of thing, the First World War.
Whilst you weren't doing guards and that kind of duty...
I never did them.
Did you have forms of inspections within your unit?
Yeah, oh yes.
What form did they take?
Well, they used to have armoury inspections where they inspect the rifles, of course. They were all, everybody was armed, but sergeants didn't get inspected. You know, I studied the back and that, but they didn't inspect.
Was there inspections of your own little unit, for example, inspection of equipment, inspection of layouts?
Oh, yes. We came under battalion audit roles, you know, like room inspections and what have you. Came around and inspected all your rooms.
And that was a regular thing?
Yeah, well, every so often. Unless you were in barracks with the sergeants when you were all together. Then they didn't inspect you, or they shouldn't have done.
Your unit, which would have all kinds of equipment and materials for the wagons, were there regular checks to see if that was in order?
Oh, yeah, sure, to have inspections, yeah.
And who would carry those out?
I used to carry them out in the officer. Yeah, sure, to inspect all the tool kits and everything. Even the fittest tools and that was all military equipment. There was no private equipment. It was all WOD.
And fitters and people like that would have to show that everything was there?
Yeah. If you lost anything, you had it to pay for.
So that came out of your pay?
I suppose so, yeah.
Now, losing a piece of equipment but much more expensive than losing a toothbrush or what have you.
Yeah,
So that could be quite a heavy thing.
Yeah, well, it taught you to look after them. Now I was responsible, like, you know, to say that all of the equipment were in this transport truck. Truck was there. Replaced, put back and that. You got into the routine of checking.
How important in your time with the battalion, that in these very early stages, was the history of the battalion and its role in the past? Was this pushed into you?
Not really, but most of us understood about what the Durham Light Infantry had done in the First World War. We realised that there had been quite a lot of men killed, local men, you know. And sort of inspired you in a way.
It gave you a feel for the regiment itself.
Yeah, yeah.
What happened? You went on leave, you came back then. What happened after that?
I'd been, when the first leave I had, then that's when we got ready to go to France.
Had you any indication that that time was coming near?
Oh yeah, I knew. You know, I more or less knew when I didn't go with the regiment, I went beforehand. Just a few of us to get things ready. I remember going to Southampton, going across from...
What date was this, Mr. Bailey?
Mr. Bain in the December, or January of 1940.
And you went on ahead. How far ahead of the main unit were
you? A week or so. It was all exciting, you know, going to France.
So what was your job going on ahead? What were you intended to do?
Well, helped arrange billets and that. I just went for the transport side.
So you got to Southampton. Do you recall the crossing over to Cherbourg?
Yeah, I remember getting on the boat on the night, yeah. Climbing on the bunks, you know. It was overnight crossing. We went to Cherbourg.
Was there a lot of troops on the ship?
There would be, but a lot. I think there's kind of few civilians on then, you know. I don't really know, but went to Cherbourg and we were in Nissenhut there, like Nissenhut.
In Cherbourg itself?
Yeah, in Cherbourg itself, till the troops came.
So what were you doing in that interval of time?
Just preparing for the troops coming.
And what kind of preparation was that?
Just billets and different things like that. You knew which companies was going to go to different billets and... Or different areas, really, because they all didn't stay in one area. And
what is the process of landing in a foreign country, having to get billets for people coming after you? How do you do that?
Well, I didn't really do it. I mean, I was just way back. There was places for us to stay when we went across. It was like these Nissenhuts, and we stayed in these Nissenhuts. I think there were about 20 of them, I'm not sure that went. There wasn't many went first. I'm not sure whether we did take a truck with us or something like that, but of course we needed something like that. And we had to be there when the others, you know, landed. The others came and take stuff up to where we were in these... They were like Nissenhut, they mightn't have been. They might have been First World War. Us that had been left standing.
Did the transport come over separate from the main unit, the whole of the transport?
No, I think they come across with them. I'm not quite sure, to be honest, that long ago now. 50-odd years or more, isn't it?
How did the French receive you?
Oh, they were pleased to see us. Oh, they paid to be.
Did you get on well with the French
yourself? Yeah. I made some good friends in France, you know. Lasted through the friendship of the war. One family later on, the young son, Marcel, I used to write to him for years and years. I don't know where he's at now, like. He spoke good English, the lad.
How did you converse in the beginning? You obviously didn't speak French.
No, I mean, you always get by, don't you? You always manage. Well, I did learn a bit French. You know, some don't bother, but I was interested. And I used to go to these people's houses, and I was interested in learning the language. Like, I couldn't speak it fluent or anything, but we could get by.
When the main unit came over, as you say, a week or so later, where did the main unit...
We went there along, we moved straight off their Amiens, I think it was, somewhere. We moved straight off from there.
So you concentrated? In one spot. Do you recall where, which area of France that was?
Up in the north. Up in the north.
Then moved on to Amiens.
Then Norway. Fresnay. We moved from that to Fresnay. Fresnay.
What was it like there?
We had a good time there. I mean, it wasn't luxury or anything like that. We were sleeping in vans. We were sleeping in vans just with the hay and that, and the rats running around. But we had enjoyable times.
The winter, as you said, was pretty hard, so yes, was that pretty rough?
Yeah. When you're young, you don't notice things as much there. Couldn't have done it today.